Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Hello, and welcome to Care Talk, where we talk about how healthcare works or doesn't work in America and answer your health insurance and healthcare questions. Please text or call in your questions at 202-838-6837, and we'll answer them in future episodes. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get the next show. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Alex Lawson, the Executive Director of Social Security Works, who's going to be talking about what's going on in Washington this week and the budget.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us, there could be a government shutdown in the weekend coming up after March 14th if Congress doesn't act. What's going on?
It's so hard to answer the what's going on in Washington, D.C. question right now. The reason is there's multiple tracks happening, and they all are related to each other, even if they're sort of separate. What I mean is you have executive branch stuff. You have Elon Musk literally, you know, high on ketamine at CPAC wielding a chainsaw on stage, and then he's doing the exact same thing in the agencies, destroying the agencies, just chopping apart Social Security Administration, so much so that the former commissioner said in 30 to 90 days, former Commissioner Martin O'Malley, we could be facing a systems collapse. You know, the president of Social Security Works, Nancy Altman, said that, you know, for 89 years, Social Security has never missed a single payment. And she's been working in the system for 50 of those 89 years. And now is the first time that she's truly afraid that the guarantee of Social Security cannot be relied on because of Elon Musk and his chainsaw. And, you know, that's just one of the agencies he's coming at. HHS at health, he's coming at Department of Education, you know, they're saying they're going to shut it down. All of that is actually just happening in the executive branch. So it doesn't have like something to do directly with the government funding, or preventing this government shutdown. But at the exact same time, it is the entirety of the discussion. So bear with me, because that's only two out of the three big stories that are all related. But what happens is the government needs to be funded to operate. And so they are supposed to put out a budget that says this is how much money we're going to spend to do things. And then they appropriate that money. But that rarely happens, actually, where they follow regular order. And part of the reason is because they're using that process to advance budget reconciliation so they can give a $4.5 trillion tax handout to Elon Musk and his billionaire friends and destroy Medicaid to, quote unquote, pay for it. The pay for it is just in Wall Street parlance. So Wall Street demands a blood sacrifice in order to give tax handouts to billionaires. So that's the budget is happening there, but it's really a longer term process that's going to take all year. And that's separate from what we're talking about right now, although obviously related, which is just how are they going to keep the government open when it runs out of money on Friday? And so That relies on passing what's called a CR, a continuing resolution. When they can't do the whole thing, then what they do is they're saying, okay, well, let's just spend basically the same as we spent last year. And it's a lower bar to get that across the board, or the finish line, I mean. But also, they never actually pass a clean CR, which is just what they did before. They always add in a bunch of things. And then, because this is DC, they like to give them silly names so no one knows what's happening. And those are called anomalies. So hopefully people followed me a little bit there. But what it all comes down to is the Republicans are continuing to steal your money to give it to Elon Musk and the richest people in the history of the world. They're coming for your Social Security. They're coming for your Medicaid. They're coming for your Medicare, Department of Education, basically anything that works for the people, they're coming with Elon Musk's chainsaw to destroy. And this CR process is just a piece of it. So the Republicans have to pass this out of both the House and the Senate, and then it goes to the president's desk. Now, they do control both the House and the Senate. In the House, it has to pass with a simple majority. Now, it has anomalies, increased defense spending on defense, right? Military industrial contract always gets their pound of flesh, while also decreasing funding on domestic priorities. So, you know, if you're poor people, it's your pound of flesh that they're taking. And also, it does nothing to address the concerns of the Democrats and what they've stated, which is you have to rein in this ketamine-fueled billionaire, Elon Musk, and take his chainsaw away. You can't allow him and the White House to just not spend money that Congress appropriates and says, you know, this is to fund System X. What the White House has been doing is just saying, well, we're not going to spend that. And there's enormous legal battles that you should have a lawyer on to talk about. But the basics are the Democrats in the House and in the Senate are both saying, we're not going to give you votes if you're just gonna let Elon Musk continue to go rip through this town and do whatever he wants. In the House, I think that probably holds firm. But I also think that, you know, the $1 trillion war chest that Donald Trump and Elon Musk have to wield against any members who step out of line, plus with the innate just cowardice of Republican politicians whose defining characteristic is just abject cravenness, cowardice, and the inability to actually stand up for their constituents. I mean, these are people who win by fewer votes than healthcare. They're going to rip away from people if they get their druthers. So they're going to vote for it because they're cowards. It goes to the Senate then, and then you need 60. And the Republicans don't have 60. So, you know, there's probably a handful of Democrats who will actually give their votes. I'll save my outrage for the future when we name them. But there's no real map that I see for them getting to 60 without this reining in Elon Musk, which I don't see the House doing. So what's being reported now is that the House is planning to jam the Senate. So they're going to pass, run out of town. And then if the Senate doesn't pass exactly what the House passed, you know, then it'll fail and there'll be a government shutdown. That, though, the House, again, cowardice being their defining characteristic. If the Senate can actually pass something, the House are going to fly back in, or it'll be negotiated and get Democratic votes. So, Laura, I hope that was straightforward enough that people get a semblance of what's going on. But at the root of it all, just remember there's multiple things, and the high priests and priestesses of D.C. Make it really complicated on purpose so that the only people who can follow it are, you know, the billionaires who have armies of lawyers, the pharmaceutical corporations, you know, the insurance corporations. And the people are left wondering, like, what the hell is going on? And we have to sit here and be like, oh, well, this anomaly and that anomaly. The billionaires are working their hardest to rob you. And we need to stand up and tell all of Congress to shut down these billionaires. That's the only shutdown that we should really be focused on, is shutting down Elon Musk and his billionaire cronies.
Thanks, Alex. So just to sum it up, the U.S. House is going to vote sometime this week on a continuing resolution. It probably will pass, but it might not. And that's to keep the government funded after Friday. The Senate, if it does pass the House, it goes over to the Senate, and the Senate has to either vote for it or not. And we don't know if there are the votes in the Senate. We don't know if there are the votes in the House. But either way, if something doesn't get passed by both the House and the Senate this week, we're looking at a government shutdown on Saturday, March 15th. Is that right?
That is correct. It has to pass the House, then the Senate, then go to the White House, signed into law, prevent a government shutdown. But the what is really important. So the what that's coming out right now, the CR that the Republicans have proposed is a disaster. It's a continued attack on the American people. And so, you know, I hope that the Democrats hold entirely firm and demand that the Republicans really spell out what it is that they're perpetrating on the American people. And then they have to, if they can pass it, you know, with their votes in the House, we're going to hold them accountable when they face their voters in the elections, you know, the elections coming up and those next year. So the government funding fight is, it's a bit of DC theater. Because if there is a shutdown, what happens is, you know, it's terrible. People don't get paid, parks close. But when it opens again, they put that money back in. Now, what DOGE is doing is people lose their jobs, cancer funding gone forever, right? Park services gone forever, parks closed forever. All so that billionaires can get another golden yacht or whatever it is. So in terms of magnitude, this theater over the government shutdown is not nearly as important as whether Congress kneels, continues to kneel before Elon Musk and his billionaire cronies, or whether they do their constitutionally mandated jobs, controlling the power of the purse, deciding how the budget is created and funded, and not allowing this unelected billionaire bureaucrat to just do whatever he wants, you know, after a late night's reading, like, I don't know, some chat forum where he comes up with his absolutely ridiculous ideas on how things work. And I'll just, and that's being nice to him too, like that it's just crazy. It's not crazy, it's corrupt. He's in it for money, right? Or otherwise, he wouldn't be raking in, you know, new government contracts at a clip that has never been seen before since, like, Teapot Dome scandal back in the day. I think maybe that's what he's going for, to be the most corrupt individual in the history of the United States of America atop his Wikipedia page.
Yeah, Elon Musk is not doing this out of the goodness of his heart. He's doing this for the benefit of his wallet.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, what we have to do again is, it's complicated, but not that complicated. So calling your members of Congress and saying, stand up for me, I'm your boss. And especially if you live in a Republican district, there's 17 frontline Republicans who are in the closest districts. And, you know, they won by fewer votes than people would lose health care. And this isn't partisan. This isn't about electoral stuff. This is just about what people, who do you represent, right? Like, if you're sent to Congress, you represent the people in your district. So if you're proposing to steal 79,000 people in your district's health care, they need to hear, no, know, and we need to educate people about what's going on. Telling the truth is not partisan. This is what's going on right now. It is a billionaire-funded coup and perpetrated, because Elon Musk is literally pulling the levers now. He's not just, you know, filling the bank accounts. So we need people to understand what's going on, to cut through the esoteric DC speak and just raise their voices and demand a government that's accountable to the people and not the billionaires.
Thank you, Alex. And be sure to pay attention to everyone that's watching or listening at home to what happens in the next few days, because next week, the government may or may not still be operating per normal, even apart from all of the gutting of government agencies that Elon Musk has been doing. So thank you, Alex. Now we're going to answer viewer questions, and we'll have Rachel Madley from Center for Health and Democracy and Louise Norris of healthinsurance.org to give you the answers that you need. Our first question is from somebody on Threads who said that their health insurance company denied my spine imaging that I get done annually to ensure none of the tumors are growing or look suspicious. Even after a peer-to-peer review was done between my neurosurgeon's office and the health insurance company, they still upheld the denial. So Louise, can you talk a little bit about what might be going on here and what the options are for this person?
Sure. So it's not 100% clear from this question whether this peer-to-peer review between the neurosurgeon and the health plan was actually an official appeal or not. But people do need to be aware that on almost all health plans in the United States, you do have access to both an internal appeal and an external review. So internal appeal is the first step. And this is an official process that you can go through with your health plan. It does usually start from your medical provider's office. So in this case, the neurosurgeon would be the one to start the appeals process with the insurance company and then with the health plan. And then the health plan will request all the information they need and review it. If when you say it's a peer-to-peer review, if you have already done the internal appeal, that might be the case. If the internal appeal is denied still, meaning they still say we're not going to cover the service, that denial letter will give you information on how to proceed to an external review. An external review is done by an independent third party. So it's no longer your health plan looking at the details, it's someone else. In most states, this is done either by the state insurance department or by a third-party entity that contracts with the state insurance department. There are a few states where it's handled by the federal government instead. You go through this process and, you know, depending on what the external review comes up with, you may or may not get the coverage approved. As we've talked about sometimes on this show before, some people have luck in if the appeal is denied and the external review is still denied. Some people do have success going to the media or contacting their lawmakers. There's no official protocol for that, and your mileage may vary, but sometimes people do get health plans to reverse their decisions by taking it to the media.
Thanks, Louise. And yeah, if you don't like the answers that you've gotten out of the official process, you can speak up and do your best to be the squeaky wheel that maybe gets a little bit of special treatment. Our next question from Simon on Threads, who says, if you're American and reading these words, chances are you pay Medicare taxes, which are automatically deducted out of every paycheck. That is, unless you're a billionaire, in which case your army of tax lawyers found a way for you to pay $0 towards Medicare. It's just another example of how these people are bleeding our country dry so they can retain more wealth than a single person could spend in 1,000 lifetimes. So, Rachel, can you tell us what's going on and how wealthier people are not paying their fair share for Medicare?
Definitely. And thank you for having me on. What this question is talking about is a certain loophole that allows people to create their own type of business entity to avoid paying Medicare taxes. The name of this entity has changed over time. It started out as a limited liability partnership. And essentially, it allows wealthy folks to redefine their income as not income, but business profit, things like that, that are not subject to Medicare taxes. Now, I think the problems with this are twofold. The first is that there is this fundamental view that you should avoid paying into Medicare and, you know, avoid those Medicare taxes. I think we need to change that view, because the beauty of Medicare is that it's a public good and it provides care to some of our most vulnerable communities, regardless of income. And so there has been a lot of research, frankly, done by people on how to avoid paying into the Medicare program by avoiding those taxes. Now, people who try to avoid those Medicare taxes often claim they don't want to be required to pay for others' healthcare, and they favor privatized health insurance. And in reality, private health insurance, you're also paying for others' healthcare, because that's just how insurance pools work. But in the case of private insurance, the money that you're paying in is not just going to healthcare, it's going to a lot of wasteful expenses, such as companies buying back their own stock to increase the value, and inefficient administrative expenses. If you look at the traditional Medicare program, that's actually the best investment out there, because it is 5 times more efficient than private insurance. And it does not spend any of the taxpayer dollars that we're paying in on things like stock buybacks or millions of dollars in executive compensation. The Medicare program is really the best use of our money, and it's really the private health insurance costs that should be scrutinized by billionaires. So I do think, aside from fixing our view of the Medicare program and really embracing paying into that program because it is such a strong, popular program in our country, we also need to fix these tax loopholes, because fixing those loopholes, making sure that the wealthy are paying their fair share into Medicare, is going to extend the solvency of the Medicare program and make sure it's there for everyone who needs it in the future, and also make sure that we are offering the best care to seniors and people with disabilities on Medicare. So Congress and the IRS should really prioritize closing those loopholes and closing new loopholes that billionaires will likely find down the road to try and avoid those Medicare taxes again.
Thank you, Rachel. And they have high-priced lawyers to continue to find new loopholes. Our next question, or more of a comment, Representative Ro Khanna wrote this on Threads. Blue Cross Blue Shield does not count chemotherapy towards the annual maximum. Stutter Hill charged $30,000 per treatment, so a friend with stomach cancer now has a bill of nearly $100,000. He also had to wait weeks for insurance approval before chemo, despite having cancer. The system is broken. So, Louise, can you tell us a little bit what might be going on here? Because chemotherapy should have gone towards the annual out-of-pocket maximum for this insured person.
Correct. If this was a regular major medical health plan, chemotherapy absolutely does go towards the annual maximum. But there are several different possibilities what could be going on here. It's possible this is not a regular major medical health plan. This might be a short-term health plan. It might be a fixed indemnity plan. Might be a mini med, which is like a sort of a skinny health plan that some employers offer that doesn't actually provide real major medical coverage, but it helps them avoid the larger of the employer mandate penalties. Sometimes plans, I know in this question, they specifically said Blue Cross Blue Shield, but it's possible this is a plan that's just renting a Blue Cross Blue Shield network and is, like I say, not real health insurance. It's also possible that this is real health insurance, but either the care was obtained out of network or that prior authorization was not received. It's just possible that there were some sort of administrative hoops to jump through that got missed along the way. So what needs to happen here is this patient or their caregivers need to find out, why is this claim not being counted towards the out-of-pocket maximum? Why basically it's being denied if the patient is on the hook for a $100,000 bill. If it's just a matter of needing to go to a different facility to stay in network or getting prior authorization, they can work with their oncologist for subsequent care that they might need. if it's a situation where they actually have a subpar health plan that isn't real major medical coverage, the priority is to get off that plan and onto real major medical coverage as soon as possible. The next open enrollment period for individual market coverage that people buy themselves, it starts November 1st. The open enrollment period for employer-sponsored coverage is set by the employer. So if this person has access to other employer-sponsored plans, they can check with their employer and see when they might have an opportunity to change. As far as the bill that's already been received, if it can't be worked out administratively, like maybe there's a billing glitch, there's maybe an error in processing the claim, obviously you want to work through the health plan to try to get it resolved. But if that's impossible, either due to the coverage itself or to, you know, administrative hurdles, then you can work with the medical provider to see about charity care, payment programs, you know, see what options they might have available. But definitely this patient needs to ask a lot of questions about what's going on.
Thanks, Louise. And I remember from personal experience, when you are very sick and going through chemo and getting giant medical bills, it is rough to be fighting the system while also fighting cancer.
Absolutely. That's if you have a caregiver who a trusted friend or family member who can advocate on your behalf, your health plan will generally require you to explicitly give them permission to speak to that person, but that can be really helpful if you're sick and going through all of this and then needing to fight your insurance plan. It's helpful to have somebody else in your corner.
Thank you, Louise. Next, we are going to talk about Medicare Advantage open enrollment period, which is still running this month through March 31st. So there's still a couple weeks left. So Rachel, can you tell us more about what the Medicare Advantage open enrollment period is and what people can or should do this month before March 31st?
Definitely. So the important thing to remember is this is different than the annual open enrollment period that happens October to December. This is the Medicare Advantage open enrollment. So you can only make changes if you're already enrolled in a Medicare Advantage plan, which, as you may remember from other shows, are the private Medicare plans that are offered by health insurance companies. If you're already in one of those plans during this time, you are allowed to switch to a different Medicare Advantage plan, and you're also allowed to drop your Medicare Advantage plan and go back to traditional Medicare. You cannot go from traditional Medicare into a Medicare Advantage plan during this time, and you also can't make changes to your Medicare Part D plan, which covers prescription drugs, if you're on traditional Medicare. So think of this enrollment period more for people who are already in Medicare Advantage to make changes to their private coverage. Now, if you're thinking about making changes and choosing a different Medicare Advantage plan, I do want to make sure that you're aware that Medicare Advantage plans actually use a lot of different administrative hurdles, such as requiring prior authorizations, denying claims for thousands of service categories that traditional Medicare cannot require that for. So you may experience delays and denials of care that you would not experience if you were in traditional Medicare. There's also smaller networks of doctors that you can see in Medicare Advantage plans. So if you are switching from one Medicare Advantage plan to another, make sure to check that your current doctors are in the network of your new plan, because those networks, again, are a lot smaller, whereas traditional Medicare, you're allowed to see any doctor that accepts Medicare's approved rate, which is a very large majority of the doctors in the country.
And can you speak a little bit of caution for if people are thinking about switching from Medicare Advantage to traditional Medicare, that they need to make sure they can get a Medigap policy to go with it?
Yes, that is a great point. So many states, when you do switch from Medicare Advantage to traditional Medicare, do not require that Medigap plans cover you. Now, a Medigap plan is a supplemental insurance plan that will help you pay for the copays in traditional Medicare, which are typically about 20% of your medical costs. Medigap plans are very, very helpful in making coverage affordable for people. But again, you need to know that if you go from an MA plan to traditional Medicare, in your state, you may not be able to get that supplemental insurance plan. Now, you can find this information about what how this works in your state by using your state's SHIP, which stands for State Health Insurance Program. If you just Google SHIP, S-H-I-P, and your state, you'll find the phone number, email address, and they can help you navigate all of this stuff. And it's a public service, so they're not biased one way or another. They're just going to present the best information to you.
Thank you, Rachel. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. Please text or call in your questions at 202-838-6837 so we can answer them in future episodes. Join us next week for more on healthcare in America and your questions answered. Be sure to subscribe to my channel or podcast wherever you get your podcasts to get the next one. And this is Care Talk.
Our democracy is hanging by a thread, but we know it's not about just winning and losing each battle. It's about persistence and building resilience.
That's why we're launching the Practivist Pod, the practice of activism made practical.
If you're looking for ways to get engaged or just for ways to stay sane, we want to help you navigate what comes next.
It's an exciting collaboration with political dynamo Jess Craven, author of the Chop Wood, Carry Water newsletter,
and grassroots activist Steve Pearson, host of the How We Win podcast.
Every week on the Practivist Pod, we're going to have important conversations with changemakers, give you practical ways to make an impact, have some fun, and inspire hope.
This is more than a podcast. It's a place for our community to grow our practice of advocacy for justice, equity, and progress.
Action is the best antidote for anxiety. So subscribe to the Practivist Pod today.